Hello, Lifebookers from around the world, and thank you for tuning in to this month's Life Note for Quality of Life Month, November 2020. I'm your host, Jordan River, and today's Life Note is Essentialism, The Disciplined Pursuit of Less, by Greg McKeown, summarized by Erica Trinidad. As always, let's start with a quote. I challenge you to invest in becoming more of an essentialist. This book is not about going back to some simpler time. It is about applying the principles of less but better to how we live our lives now and in the future. Core concept. Whether you're a burnt-out corporate executive, an overly busy parent, or even a struggling creative stretched in too many directions, the path of the essentialist may just be key in getting your life back on track towards what's truly important. In equal parts compelling manifesto and practical self-help guide, Greg McKeown's Essentialism fully captures everything the average person needs to learn for their own disciplined pursuit of less but better in everyday living. The goal of Essentialism is to empower every individual to take back control of their life by embodying the philosophy of less but better. In this way, essentialists around the world are leading a powerful revolution against the widely accepted, yet deeply misguided, badge of busyness prevalent in our hyper-connected world today. If you find yourself completely done with letting everyone else's agenda take priority over your own, and you're finally ready to redesign and live a life grounded in purpose, clarity, intention, and meaning, then Essentialism will light the path for you every single step of the way. Let's get into our first big thought for today. Essentialism is the relentless pursuit of less but better. It's not about how to get more things done. It's about how to get the right things done. Quote, I challenge you here and now to make a commitment, to make room to enjoy the essential. Do you think for one second you will regret such a decision? Is it at all likely you will wake up one day and say, I wish I had been less true to myself and had done all the non-essential things that others expected of me? End quote. Essentialism is not just a new way of thinking. It's a system that enables you to actively pursue only what is important in a disciplined and organized manner. The end goal of essentialism is to enable you to operate at your highest point of contribution by recognizing only what is essential and acting on it deliberately. Your highest point of contribution occurs when you invest your limited time, energy, and resources in only the right things. We can see this clearly demonstrated when comparing the way of the non-essentialist versus the essentialist shown in the figures in the Life Note. In a nutshell, for both images, the same amount of energy is being applied, but the difference is in how the energy is directed. By dividing up among many activities, the non-essentialist ends up with a millimeter of progress in a million directions because they want to do everything now and perfectly. On the other hand, an essentialist would intentionally direct that energy towards only the handful of activities that they deem most important, because they fundamentally reject the idea that we can fit all of that energy in the first place. As a result, their highest point of contribution materializes in these endeavors that matter most. In that sense, the essentialist believes in the real-world trade-off of choices, and accepts that the journey to practice this discipline will require them to make tough decisions. They believe in living by design, not by default. Essentialism, then, is the disciplined, systematic approach for determining where our highest point of contribution lies, then making the execution of those things almost effortless as a result. It's not enough to pursue essentialism. One must also reject the traps of non-essentialism in the way we think and act in everyday life. Quote, when we don't purposefully and deliberately choose where to focus our energies and time, other people, our bosses, our colleagues, our clients, and even our families will choose for us. And before long, we'll have lost sight of everything that is meaningful and important. We can either make our choices deliberately or allow other people's agendas to control our lives. End quote. There are three core differences in the model of living that non-essentialism and essentialism espouse. How one thinks, what one does, and what one gets as a result of the other two. The objective of essentialism is to shift from the former to the latter. A non-essentialist thinks all things to all people. An essentialist thinks less but better. A non-essentialist does the undisciplined pursuit of more. An essentialist does the disciplined pursuit of less. A non-essentialist gets a life that does not satisfy. The essentialist gets a life that really matters. In his research, McCown emphasizes that while it's desirable to make this change, there are many legitimate reasons why bright, capable people may end up living the life of a non-essentialist, usually by default. One reason is due to how society punishes good behavior, saying no, and rewards bad behavior, saying yes. This leads to the paradox of success. Having clarity of purpose leads you to some measure of success. This gives you the reputation of a go-to person, which leads to increased options and opportunities, and ultimately results in us being distracted and stretched thinner and thinner, undermining the very clarity that led us to success in the first place. There are several other trends present in our environment and communities today that also create the perfect storm for non-essentialism to thrive. First, too many choices. Modern society has been underprepared for the exponential wealth of choices that come with living today. We lose our ability to filter what's important because just thinking about it becomes overwhelming. This results in decision fatigue, where the quality of our choices deteriorates as we're forced to make more and more of them. Second, too much social pressure. It's not just about hyperconnectivity, but also how much pressure results from this hyperconnection. We're not just experiencing information overload, which is already hard to manage, but opinion overload as well, whether it's from our friends, family, or even strangers on the internet. And third, the idea that you can have it all. The idea of wanting to do it all and have it all is nothing new. The difference is that this myth is especially damaging in the world today when choices and expectations have increased over tenfold. If we are truly to pursue the way of essentialism, it requires the strength of resolve to not only commit to the disciplined pursuit of less, but to actively reject the undisciplined pursuit of more that's so prevalent in the world today. In the same way that our closets get cluttered with clothes we will never accumulate, so do our lives get cluttered with well-intended commitments that have piled up. And unless we have a system for purging them, they will live on in perpetuity once we've adopted them. If we don't take action, we may end up living non-essential just by default. On the other hand, an essentialist would approach that closet in three main steps. They explore their options, they eliminate what's unnecessary, and execute on the remaining essentials as seamlessly as possible. But before they can take these steps, they must first embrace the essence of essentialism and cultivate the foundational mindset that's necessary to carry out this approach with ease. There are three core truths to the essence of essentialism. We always have a choice. Very few things are essential. And there is a trade-off to everything. Quote, "These simple truths awaken us from our non-essential stupor. They free us to pursue what really matters. They enable us to live at our highest level of contribution." End quote. To think like an essentialist requires both believing in the three core truths while actively rejecting the three deeply entrenched assumptions counter to them. I have to, it's all important, and I can do both. When we free ourselves by believing and living these three core truths out, the way of the essentialist becomes natural and even instinctive. 1. I choose to. It's powerful to have a wealth of choices, but it's even more powerful to acknowledge our ability to choose in the first place. Choices can be taken away, but our ability to choose is always ours. As William James once wrote, "My first act of free will shall be to believe in free will." Developing our ability to choose choices in everyday life is what distinguishes an essentialist who exercises the power of choice from a non-essentialist who forfeits their right to choose. 2. Only a few things really matter. Distinguishing the trivial many from the vital few is a foundation to doing less but better. Do not fall into the trap of overestimating the unimportance of practically everything. Whether it's practicing the Pareto principle, the 80-20 rule, or even following the power law theory, specific efforts produce exponentially more results than others, discerning only that which is truly important requires actively rejecting that which is not at the same time. This is why an essentialist actually takes more time at the onset to explore all other options. They understand that the payoff of the many good opportunities presented to them is far less valuable than of the few truly great ones. Taking more time to first discern the right decision saves them effort down the line. They explore deliberately, but only commit to an extremely narrow few. In other words, they're able to do less, but better, in the long run. And 3, I can do anything, but not everything. Essentialism recognizes that you can try to avoid the reality of trade-offs, but you can't escape them. This is classically illustrated by many organizations and even individuals whenever they try to straddle their strategy into solving a problem. In the simplest terms, straddling means keeping your existing strategy intact while simultaneously also trying to adopt the strategy of a competitor. Non-essentialists do this all the time. They approach every trade-off by asking, "How can I do both?" Whereas essentialists ask a much more difficult yet liberating question, "Which problem would I rather want?" To accept the reality of trade-offs is to act on them deliberately. To be an essentialist requires viewing trade-offs as an inherent part of life instead of a negative aspect that we work to escape from. Rather than thinking, "What do I have to give up?" Essentialists instead ask, "What do I want to go big on?" In doing so, they make profound shifts in how they approach work, life, and everything else. Discerning what is truly essential requires space to think, time to look and listen, permission to play, wisdom to sleep, and the discipline to apply selective criteria for every choice made. Quote, "Essentialists spend as much time as possible exploring, listening, debating, questioning, and thinking. But their exploration is not an end in itself. The purpose of the exploration is to discern the vital few from the trivial many." End quote. After embracing the essence of essentialism, the next step is to explore your options. Paradoxically, essentialists actually take more time to discern their options than your everyday non-essentialists. Their difference lies in how both groups approach their process of exploration. Essentialists actively evaluate a broad set of options before committing to any. Non-essentialists, on the other hand, get so excited by virtually every opportunity, they pursue each win reactively and end up exploring less as a result. Exploring, thinking, and reflecting are usually seen as trivial distraction by those who believe that being overly busy is evidence of productivity. Yet these very activities are the actual antidote for the non-essential busyness that infects so many of us. After all, they are critical to distinguishing what is actually trivial diversion from what is truly essential. Created by design, the following strategies are key to cultivating the skill of discerning the vital few from the trivial many. First, escape. Focus is not something that we simply possess. It is also something we do. Intentionally creating the space to escape the everyday busyness of life is essential to discerning the essential few from the trivial many. Non-essentialists are usually too busy doing to think about life. Essentialists, on the other hand, intentionally create spaces to escape and explore life. And they don't just take one idea or possibility and think about it obsessively, either. An essentialist creates the space to explore hundreds of possibilities, in depth and breadth. They deliberately set aside distraction-free time in a distraction-free space to do absolutely nothing but think, concentrate, read, and learn. In order to have focus, they recognize that they must escape to focus. Second, look. Essentialists make a point to see what really matters. They pay attention to the signal in the noise, hear what is not being said, and scan to find the essence in the information. Think of it like being a journalist writing the lead of the story. The best journalists do not simply relay information. Their value is in discovering what people truly care about. They explore pieces of information, figure out the relationships between them, and construct the whole of the story from the sum of its parts, creating a report that just about anyone can understand and is compelling to read. In this manner, McCown recommends being the journalist of your own life. Pay attention to the trends and patterns that arise in the everyday. Take a step back to look at the big picture. Keep a journal if you have to. Engage with a problem actively. Filter for unusual details and seek a different perspective. With enough practice, you can tap into your own inner journalist and find the answers you need in discerning what is truly worth your time and effort versus what is simply non-essential and noise. Third, play. For essentialists, they recognize that play doesn't just help them explore what is essential. They wholly recognize that it is essential in and of itself. When we do anything simply for the joy of doing it, rather than as a means to an end, we engage in play. Studies show that extensive play leads to brain plasticity, adaptability, and creativity. It stimulates the parts of the brain involved in both careful, logical reasoning and carefree, unbound exploration. Play is fundamental to being an essentialist because it fuels this carefree exploration in at least three specific ways. It broadens the range of options available to us because it helps us see new connections and possibilities, challenge old assumptions, expand our stream of consciousness, come up with new stories, and be more receptive to untested ideas. Play serves as an antidote to stress. Recent findings suggest that stress increases the activity in the amygdala, which monitors our emotions, while reducing the activities in the hippocampus, which helps us with cognitive function. As a result, we think less clearly with increased stress, and moreover, being in this state can actually shut down the creative, inquisitive, exploratory parts of our brain. And third, play also has a positive effect on the executive functions of the brain. These include planning, prioritizing, scheduling, anticipating, delegating, deciding, and analyzing. In short, most of these skills that anyone needs to excel in business as well as in life. Bringing us to our fourth strategy, sleep. The highest priority of any essentialist is to protect their ability to prioritize. Simply put, the best asset you have for making your highest point of contribution is yourself. Resting and recharging are necessary in protecting the asset. Yet, as many as an ambitious person living in a non-essential life can attest to, pushing oneself to the limit is easy, but saying no to opportunities so that you can take a nap is actually harder to do. Non-essentialists believe that 1 hour less of sleep equals 1 more hour of productivity, that sleep is for failures, a luxury that breeds laziness and gets in the way of doing it all. Essentialists, on the other hand, understand that 1 hour more of sleep equals several more hours of higher productivity, peak performance, increased creativity, and their best levels of mental contribution. Recent studies even show that sleep, while often associated with giving rest to the body, is actually more about the brain. A full night's sleep may actually increase one's brain power and enhance one's ability to problem solve overall. Fifth strategy, select. This strategy can be easily summarized by, it's either a hell yes or a not at all, McCown states succinctly with the 90% rule. As you evaluate an option, think about the single most important criterion for that decision and then simply give that option a score between 0 and 100. If you rate it any lower than 90%, you can automatically change the rating to 0 and simply reject it. This way, you avoid getting caught up in indecision or even stuck with the options that got rated in the 60s or 70s. Mastering this essentialist skill requires being vigilant about the reality of trade-offs. By definition, applying highly selective criteria is a trade-off. Sometimes you'll have to turn down a seemingly very good option and have faith that the perfect one will soon come along. Sometimes this works out, and sometimes it doesn't. The point is, this very act of applying highly selective criteria forces you to choose which perfect option to wait for, rather than letting other people or even the universe choose for you. Eliminating the trivial many in order to make room for the vital few requires purpose-driven clarity, gracefully saying no, cutting our losses, editing repeatedly, and setting proper boundaries. Quote, it's not enough to simply determine which activities and efforts don't make the best possible contribution. You still have to actively eliminate those that do not. End quote. Once you master the mindset of essentialism, and discern the vital few from the trivial many. The next step is to eliminate the trivial many in order to make the execution of the vital few as seamless as possible. But how do we eliminate with purpose, grace, and ease? Decluttering the commitments and opportunities in our life requires finesse and a lot of practice. McCown recommends the following strategies. First, clarify. Essentialists always have a strategy in place that is both concrete and inspirational for any project, opportunity, or organization. In other words, they deliberately create their essential intent, a singular, clear-cut decision that settles 1,000 decisions later on. Contrary to the popular vision or mission statement, which is vague even if it is inspirational, essential intent can be viewed as your one strategic choice that eliminates a universe of other options. Think of it as deciding you're becoming a doctor instead of a lawyer. Choosing one over the other already maps a course for the next 5, 10, or even 20 years of your life. And once the big decision is made, all subsequent decisions come into better focus. Second, dare. Courage is the key in the elimination of the trivial many from the vital few. It's what differentiates those who preach about essentialism with mere lip service versus those who actually dare to live it out in everyday life. In every moment, we encounter a brand new situation where we may be tempted to say yes even when we want to say no, turning down invitations from colleagues, projects from your boss, or even activities with our loved ones. And there are many valid reasons we do so. We're scared to rock the boat. We're scared to have social awkwardness or scared to burn bridges. But daring to gracefully say no is key if we want to truly live the way of an essentialist. The question then becomes, how do we skillfully navigate saying no? Here are a few ways. Craft strong internal clarity. When we're clear about our priorities, it's like we have an invisible force field protecting us from the non-essentials because we have a strong reference by which to make our decisions. Separate the decision from the relationship. It's vital not to confuse one from the other. Denying their request is not the same as denying that person. Once you make this distinction, you can summon up the courage and compassion to communicate it effectively. Use softer language to communicate instead of no. Whether you're saying, "I'm flattered you thought of me, but I don't have the bandwidth," or "I would very much like to, but I'm overcommitted," refusing someone clearly and politely can be done without utilizing a blunt no. Focus on the trade-off. A graceful no grows out of a clear but unstated calculation of the trade-off. Keeping your opportunity costs in mind can strengthen your resolve in making your decision. And finally, make peace with the fact that saying no often requires trading popularity for respect. When we push back effectively, it shows people that our time is highly valuable. Even if they react in anger or disappointment in the short term, their respect kicks in for the long run. Moving on to our third decluttering strategy, uncommit. Cutting our losses to win big is vital to living like an essentialist. Beware of and avoid the following if you want to practice being comfortable with cutting your losses. Avoid sunk cost bias. You have to avoid the tendency to continue to invest time, money, or energy into something that you already know is a losing proposition. Remember, the more you invest in something, the harder it is to let go. But when the facts are clear, it's better to cut your losses early rather than fall into the vicious cycle of trying to recoup your investment with even more investment. And avoid the endowment effect. We tend to undervalue things that aren't ours and overvalue things that we already own. This applies to opportunities. When we feel like we own certain activities, it becomes harder to uncommit. A few solutions to this are to get over our fear of waste, to break our habit of making casual commitments, and to admit failure so that we can begin a new track to success. Our fourth uncluttering strategy, edit. Editing aids the effortless execution of the essentialist by removing anything distracting, unnecessary, or awkward. When we practice discipline editing, we add to our level of contribution. This doesn't involve merely saying no or taking things away. Good editing requires deliberate subtraction to actually add more to the opportunities that come our way. For example, to improve our decision-making, we must cut out options first. This helps us increase our focus and deepen our deliberation on the options remaining. Or take condensing. When we say something as clearly and concisely as possible, we improve the strength of our message by saying more with less. Fifth strategy, limit. The disappearance of boundaries is typical of our non-essentialist era. And to enforce them has real costs in our relationships, whether they're personal or professional in nature. However, not pushing back costs more. After all, our ability to choose is what's most essential in life. If we don't set any boundaries, there will never be any to begin with. And any essentialist knows that if you have limits, then you will become limitless. Boundaries are not constraining, they are liberating. They help us set rules in advance so that the need for the direct no is eliminated altogether down the line. It is not your job to solve other people's problems for them. Yes, we must do our parts to make a difference in the lives of others. But when we take on someone else's problems, all we end up doing is taking away their ability to solve it for themselves. When we don't set clear limits, we can end up imprisoned by the limits others have set for us. Focus on finding your deal breakers and intentionally set social contracts with the people in your life before embarking on any opportunity together. With enough practice, enforcing your boundaries will become easier over time and can further empower you as you live the way of the essentialist. Invest the time you saved by eliminating the non-essentials into designing a system that makes execution of the essentials almost effortless. Quote, "You can't wait until that closet is bursting at the seams and then take superhuman efforts to purge it. You have to have a system in place so that keeping it neat becomes routine and effortless." End quote. Once you eliminate the non-essentials and figure out which activities and efforts to keep in your life, you should put a system in place so that you can execute on the essentials as seamlessly and consistently as possible. First, buffer. We live in an unpredictable world, and while non-essentialists tend to always assume a best-case scenario, which forces them to execute at the last minute, essentialists look ahead and prepare for different contingencies. They build several buffers with a lot of early preparation in order to prepare for the unseen, thus giving themselves some wiggle room when things come up as they inevitably do. Essentialists use the good times to buffer for the bad by utilizing extreme preparation, always adding at least 50% to their time estimate, and conducting scenario planning in order to give themselves as much slack as possible in advance. Next, subtract. Removing the obstacles in one's path is crucial to seamless execution. And while a non-essentialist would approach this removal in a reactive, haphazard manner, essentialists would act on this intentionally rather than defaulting to band-aid solutions. Instead of looking for the most obvious or immediate obstacles, essentialists ask, "What is getting in the way of achieving what is essential?" In this manner, essentialists simply make a one-time investment in removing obstacles. This approach goes beyond just solving problems. It's a method for reducing your efforts to maximize your results. Next, progress. The way of the non-essentialist is to go big on everything, to try to do it all, have it all, and fit it all in. They operate under the false logic that the more they strive, the more they will achieve. But the reality is, the more they reach for the stars, the harder it becomes to get themselves off the ground. On the other hand, essentialists start small and celebrate progress. Instead of going for the big and flashy wins that don't really matter, essentialists pursue the small and simple wins in areas that are essential. Research shows that of all forms of human motivation, the most effective one is progress. That's because a small, concrete win creates momentum and affirms our faith in our further success. Here's a few ways we can practice this. First, focus on minimal viable progress. Constantly ask yourself, what is the smallest amount of progress that will be useful and valuable to the essential task that we are trying to get done, and then act on it accordingly. Next, do the minimal viable preparation. There are two ways to approach an important goal or deadline. Start early and small, or start late and big. Non-essentialists are guilty of the latter. They do things last minute or pull all-nighters before big deadlines. Essentialists, on the other hand, believe in starting at the earliest possible moment with the minimal possible time invested required. And finally, visually reward progress. There is power in visibly seeing our progress towards a goal. Not to mention that the act of positively reinforcing our successes allows us to reap more enjoyment out of the process itself. Moving on to our next system focus, flow. We unlock our genius when we cultivate a routine of our own. Essentialism believes in designing a routine that makes achieving what you have identified as essential the default position. By doing so, they make execution almost effortless. Conversely, non-essentialists try and execute the essentials by force. They believe that execution is a matter of raw effort alone. And in doing so, they allow non-essentials to be the default in their everyday life. Routine is one of the most powerful tools for removing obstacles. When you create a routine that enshrines the essentials, you begin to execute them on autopilot. As a result, instead of consciously pursuing the essential, it will happen without ever having to think about it. Our next system strategy, focus. The way of the essentialist is to tune into the present. Their minds do not spin out about the past or the future. They focus on enjoying the moment and constantly asking themselves, what is important right now? They recognize that multitasking itself is not the enemy of essentialism. It's multi-focusing. You can do two things at once, whether it's washing the dishes while listening to the radio or texting someone while watching the TV. What you can't do is concentrate on two things at once. Essentialists accept this reality and work around it by focusing on the present moment and constantly organizing their priorities around it. And finally, B. There are two ways to think about essentialism. You can either think about it as something you do occasionally versus viewing it as something that you are. With the former, essentialism simply ends up being one more thing to add to your already overstuffed life. With the latter, it becomes a different, simpler way of doing everything. It becomes an all-encompassing approach to living and leading, and ends up becoming the essence of your person. And while it's important to practice the essentialist strategies that have been laid out, the final step is embodying the essentialist philosophy to truly become one at heart. In the journey to be an essentialist, many non-essentialists find that they simply absorb essentialism at the surface level, yet remain non-essentialist at the core. This may happen whenever we encounter the paradox of success. When new opportunities come our way as a result of the success we gained from practicing essentialist strategies, will we get distracted from the path to our highest form of contribution? Or will we remember to keep going on the journey we initially committed to as a striving essentialist in the first place? Remember, essentialism isn't just about success. It's about living a life of meaning and purpose. The goal of essentialism is not to merely improve our ability to achieve. It's to deepen the quality of our lives by taking stock of and keeping in clear view all that is important. When we embody essentialism, we are striving for the well-lived life that fully satisfies. At the end of the day, to live as an essentialist in our too many things all the time society is and always will be an act of quiet revolution. I want to thank you for spending this time today as we reviewed this life note for Quality of Life Month, moving you one book closer to a 12-category smart life. I can't wait to bring you more wisdom for next month and each and every month as we explore the 12 categories. Thank you so much for listening. This is Jordan River signing off saying, have an extraordinary day, everybody. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.